You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Hello, hello again, ladies and gentlemen out there. It's nice to be back. The title of this message is The Mysteries of America, Part 2. Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen. I think you'll like this show. There's a very interesting subject coming up on this one. Something that I had learned about years ago, and we were reading Manly P. Hall's book, which is called The Secret Destiny of America. And I'll refresh you a little bit from last week. We talked about the professor. The professor helped design the flag with George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and a couple of other people that were there at the place. And the professor didn't give his name, but he's the one that designed the flag so that it would have 6 and 7 is 13 stripes. Which to me can represent many things. But if it was coming from a Freemasonic point of view, and it might have, that would be man perfected, man becoming God. You know, the signal of man becoming God is the UN. That's where Lucius Trust is. It was called Lucifer Trust. This is where the one world government, the one world religion will be based. And yet there will be no New World Order because the Jew is a failure. However, there's something I've realized, and I believe that they've used a lot of things in the past to steal money from all of us. Not only have they used the Federal Reserve to steal money, but the United States has a black budget. And there's enough money in that black budget every year to pay that debt off within 4 to 5 years, that fake debt. Not only that, but they've used the space program, in my opinion, as one of the many avenues to draw secret monies. You see, because I don't believe we've gone into space. Maybe just a satellite here or there, or maybe a telescope. But supposedly, man cannot get by the Van Allen belt. Whether that's true or not, you may wish to argue about that. There's just too much radiation. So therefore, all this fakery was to prove that man was becoming God through intellect, as you can see. So the UN was one of those bullet points. Another one of the bullet points was space. The space, you know, one thing you want to realize is when Roswell happened, it was right after the war where they had found out all these new Nazi crafts that the intelligent German scientists had built. So, of course, they'd be trying those out. And, you know, they brought through Operation Paperclip, they brought a lot of those scientists to America in order to continue their investigations. So Roswell just so happens to have happened right, you know, 1947, I believe it was. I mean, we're talking 2 years or less than after the war. Doesn't that make sense? So all this money's been spent, supposedly, on space travel. When in reality, I believe they know that they can't go into space. So they wouldn't waste the money on it if they couldn't go out there. They'd take the money and pretend it had a purpose like that and use it for other things, as they always do. Black budgets. Like in Iraq, they, through Halliburton, they stole all kinds of money from us. Pretended to build buildings for the Iraqi people after the war. But those buildings didn't have any electricity and didn't have any plumbing. But when the press took pictures of them, it looked like they were buildings, looked like they were functioning buildings. But they weren't. And these things ought to tell you something, you see. See, they steal money through cancer research, and they take, you know, they work on the people's feelings, again, feelings. It's always feelings, you understand? And they have people, they know people are dying of cancer, and they have no intent on healing that cancer. Does that surprise you? Do you think I'm wrong? Would you like to tear my head right off my shoulders? They don't have any intent on curing cancer. They don't want to cure cancer. I told you that they can make it rain in Massachusetts through the chemtrails. But yet we have a drought in California. You don't think that they could go out and spray those skies and make it rain out in California? Of course they could. They don't want to make it rain out in California. They've stolen money from us in many more ways than those ways there. And they don't use it for any of our good. They have no intention. No intention of fixing the economy. They have no intention of fixing the banking system. They have no intention to bring back jobs to America. They have no intention to make a better life for you and I. They have no intention, because why do I say that? How do I know that? Is this just, am I a conspiracy theorist? Or am I somebody that just can see things very clearly? You see, if they wanted to make it rain in California, they could make it rain. And if they wanted our farms to be successful, they could make our farms successful. What good has it done by sending our jobs overseas? It has done no good at all. The products are no good. They're garbage. Do they want you and I to have products that are good, that last, that improve our lives? No, they don't. Because if they did, it would already be happening now. Germany was making the finest products in the world. That's the main reason they wanted to take Germany out. The products they made, the Jews made in garbage countries, couldn't even come close to Germany's products. So they have no intention in fixing that. And they're stealing money, just like I was talking with David Martins. The Jews are pretending they're not stealing any money from Africa, the African continent. But yet, the Chinese are doing it now. What do you think? The Jews just said, oh, well, we don't want that anymore. Go ahead, China. You go down there and you steal all you want. We won't interfere. Come on, use your brain, will you? They're doing it by proxy. They do lots of things by proxy, as we can see. Because they want the proxy to take the heat for what's happening. I really don't know what they want all this money for and what they want all the world's gold for. I really don't. I know they want to kill us all. That's all I do know. But I mean, I don't. These people don't make any sense. This is a parasite that is just. I don't know how to describe it. It's you know. It's stupid. It doesn't know when it has a good thing going for itself. It'll even kill its own self. It doesn't care if it kills the host. It doesn't care if it kills itself. It's just destructive. It's a destructive parasite. So they have no intention. You will not have any jobs coming back to America, because I had said this before, that they intend that this zone of the world will be a welfare zone. They want us to live off them so they can control how much we have, and so that if we say anything, they can shut us off. See, that's the purpose of having a license. Why do you give a license to somebody? Why? So you can take it away, ladies and gentlemen. That's why. Why do you give a doctor a license? So that if the doctor doesn't follow all the precepts that you wish him or her to, then you take their license away. The fear factor again. It's always the fear factor. Not only that, but they make money on the way in when you're becoming a doctor. There's just no end to this thing. There's no end to it. So anyway, on to the show. I just wanted to explain some of that to you, that if you think the world is going to get better, you've got another thing coming. As long as this parasite is in charge of your country, it never, ever, ever will get any better. You say, well, where's the hope in that, Dave? That doesn't make that doesn't make me feel good. Well, you should have thought of that a long time ago. I'm going to tell you something right now, that within a short time, we could heal all these things in America. A very short time, within a 4-year period, we could have this thing turned around and heading the right way. But not with this parasite in control. There is no way that they intend to give you a better life. Remember what I've told you in the past, that it's in the guise of your protection. All the things that are done to you are in the guise of protecting you. It's absolutely mental illness is what it is. Do you know that they want to irradiate all the food? Do you know why they want to irradiate all the food? What that will do is take all the nutrients out of the food. But hold on, ladies and gentlemen. It's for your protection. You see, there's microorganisms in that food. And God, Yahweh, has made your body able to deal with those things. But man, God, man, he wants to protect you from those from those vitamins. You don't believe me, do you? They want to irradiate the food to kill all the microorganisms in the food. How about the Terminator seed? How about the fact that Monsanto, a Jew company, has decided, notice how when you go to the store and I wanted to buy a watermelon with seeds in it. We don't have that anymore. Why don't we have that anymore? As I have told you in the past, you take a seed out of an apple, you place it in the ground, you grow another apple tree, and out comes apples. Well, now, that's not the way it works anymore. You take the seed out of the apple, put it in the ground, no tree grows. No new apple comes out. You want a new tree? You go to Monsanto, the Jew, and you buy a seed at whatever price that he may wish to sell it to you. Maybe today that seed is $3 a bag. Maybe tomorrow it's $30,000 a bag. Who knows? Is that the way it should be, ladies and gentlemen? Should the 2% people own 96% of the media? Should the 2% run all the governments of the world? Should the 2% have the rights to our seeds? Those are Yahweh's seeds. And those were given to us. Remember what you just heard David Martins say? That they wanted to charge the farmers in South Africa for the rain? Whose rain is that? Is that the Jews' rain? Anybody want to answer that question? Are those the Jews' seeds? Pepsi is using aborted fetus parts in their products, experimenting to come up with better flavors. Would you like to drink some Pepsi? I mean, something's wrong here. Something's very wrong. But neither here nor there, let's go on with the Mysteries of America, Part 2. So, after the flag, I was telling you about how the professor, he left the small part of the flag where the stars are today. He left that as a modifiable part on the flag. And so it had started out as the Union Jack as that. And then eventually it went to 13 stars. And eventually to 50. Obama says there's 52 states, though. He doesn't even know how many states there are. So, then we went on with Manly P. Hall's book, and we went into Thomas Paine and the Rights of Man. Now, as I had explained to you last week, when man is declaring his rights, who is he declaring them to? Or should I say, whom is he declaring them to? Well, he was declaring them to King George in England. But he was also declaring those rights to somebody else. And I really believe it to be true. He was declaring his rights to God. The rights of man. Liberty. It's just amazing. Liberty, equality, fraternity. This was right out of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. They said that they would get the fools to speak these things to the public. That's Freemasonry, especially in France. Liberty, equality, fraternity. Liberty from what or for what? Liberty to disobey Yahweh's law and do things that Yahweh does not want done? Equality? For whom? We don't have to declare equality to somebody. We're already who we are. We're the tribes of Israel. We were told to take dominion over the other families of this earth, which we did. We don't need to declare equality. See, the Jew and the Shabbos Goy, or got the Shabbos Goy, to declare these things. The only way you'd be declaring equality was for somebody that wasn't equal to the Israelites. And who would that be? That would be the Jews. That would be the blacks. That would be the brown races, etc. So the Jew wanted to be equal with the Israelites, and he wanted to make sure that all the other races were equal there too, because in the guise of equality, really what happens is it's the same thing as communism. You understand? Communism is based on the idea that you're going to bring everybody up to the same level so that everybody has equal pay, equal equality in all ways, right? But in reality, what communism is communism is going to bring everybody but the Jew down to the bottom level. Whereas the state is God and the proletariat is just a slave race. So that's what equality, the purpose of equality is when you're talking about it in the lodge. You're talking about liberty to be a homosexual, liberty to worship Satan, liberty to whatever you might want to, whatever vile thing that this filthy, rotten creature called the Jew can think up. And they're still thinking new stuff up even today. You know what they call art? They have a new portrait or something out that they call art. It's got a Jew, and on his back is his baby defecating on him and urinating on him. That's what art is to the Jew. Don't you want to be equal with him? Aren't you glad you're equal with him, Shabbos Goy? Now, how about fraternity? See, fraternity means that all men are brothers. Did Yahweh say that all men are brothers? No. Who said all men are brothers? The Jews said. That's who said. We are not all brothers. Do you think the black people are acting like there are brothers in this country today? Do you think the Mexicans are acting as our brothers? Do you see any unity there between us and those races? Except for liberals and freaks and, you know, queers or whatever. Do you see any unity? I don't feel any unity. I don't see any unity. And there never will be any unity. You know, people would say, I disagree with that, because they'd see a ball team who's paid millions of dollars. Each player is paid millions of dollars to be a team and work as a team. So you see something like the Boston Red Sox, and you've got all colors of people, and you've got, you know, all different races on there. And they might work together and win a pennant at some point. Well, I mean, if you're being paid millions of dollars, there can be short-time unity between anybody, right? But when it comes down to everyday general unity and brotherhood, I mean, there's hardly any brotherhood in the white race, never mind other races. We got problems. Problems that we're addressing. And soon they'll be addressed completely, because everything's pushing it that way. So this liberty, equality, and fraternity was right out of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. You know, I have to laugh because Bill Cooper, he said this wasn't written by the Jews, it was written by the Catholics. It's, you know, it's amazing. We all know who that was written by. The jargon spells it right out to you. What was going on in the world and what is going on in the world today? Even Henry Ford said in his day it was the very thing that was going on. Well, it's still going on today, and it's still the same protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And I told you in my first show from the book, Mystery of the Serpent, that the Jews went into a Shriner's Auditorium, and they admitted in this Shriner's Auditorium that the protocols of the learned elders of Zion are their property. They didn't know there were other people there. They made another of their many mistakes that they make. So it has been admitted to, and it is what it is. That's it, plain and simple. No more than that. So Thomas Paine, you know, was a man who wasn't of Yahweh. You see, they weren't here to institute Yahweh's law in America. They were here to institute man's law in America. So let's see what it says. The stormy petrel of revolutionary days in America and France was Thomas Paine, son of a hard-working Quaker who made his living cutting barrel staves. Young Thomas's formal education ended in grammar school. He practiced his father's trade for a time before turning his mind to politics. Now, there's the first problem right there. Yahweh does not like politics. Yahweh does not want any politics. There's no need for politics when we have Yahweh's law. Understand that. So there is no need for federal government. There is no need for any of that. It would be taken care of by appointed judges and the priesthood. So politics, this is his first problem. And so he turned his mind to politics and the social problems of his time. Benjamin Franklin inspired Thomas Paine to become a champion of human rights. Their first meeting took place in England, and at Franklin's suggestion, Paine came to America and entered into the publishing business. Now, who runs the publishing business, ladies and gentlemen? And Mr. Franklin, he is suggesting that Paine come to America and enter into the publishing business. English-born, he became an outstanding champion in the cause of freedom for the colonies. His writings so fanned the flame of patriotism that it has been said of him that he did more to win the independence of the colonies with his pen than George Washington accomplished with his sword. Yes, we are reviewing some of last week by reading this, ladies and gentlemen. There is little doubt that Thomas Paine assisted Jefferson in writing the Declaration of Independence. Present research even points to the probability that he composed the entire document, then submitted it to Jefferson for editing and revision. The references in the Declaration of Independence to the laws of nature and nature's God, which I told you is Pan. Didn't I tell you that? Now, the laws of nature were made by Yahweh, but nature's God is not Yahweh. Yahweh made nature. Yahweh made the laws of nature. He made all everything to do with it, but nature's God is Pan. Especially reflect Paine's theological convictions. Paine held several offices in the Continental government during the period of the Revolutionary War, and in 1789 returned to Europe. Remember, he went to France, and Robespierre didn't like him. I'm going to just move forward. And he had him jailed, where he wrote the rest of his book, or the first part of his immortal book, Age of Reason, which he wrote the second part during the 10 months of his incarceration. So Paine returned to the United States in 1802, and his closing years were comparatively uneventful. He died in 1809. 10 years later, his body was sent back to England to be reinterred into his native earth. Thomas Paine was a free thinker, a radical pamphleteer. It was his misfortune to be born out of time, yet by his very birth and the energy of his nature, he helped to change the face of time. He attacked the corruption of the British government with such honesty and skill that he was the most feared man in England. Then, with the simple conviction of a Quaker deist, he threw the power of his written word against the religious corruption that burdened the peoples of Europe and interfered with the social progress of mankind. Now, Yahweh's law would have done the same thing. Yahweh's law is much stronger than anything that this man could write. Yahweh's law is much purer than anything this man could write, and Yahweh's law would come against the corruption of the British government with such honesty and skill that he would still have been the most feared man in England. In the Age of Reason, Paine emphasized the necessity of separating the spheres of church and state, looking at both institutions in their practical state of corruption rather than in their ideal state of mutual integrity. He held a broad view of religion in general, believing that all faiths were naturally good and were necessary to the spiritual security of humanity. Well, let me be the first one to tell you that all faiths are not good. Such broadness was out of season, and it made him numerous enemies among those holding fanatical convictions. It was dangerous to preach religious tolerance in his day, when the spirit of persecution was still strong. When the clergy involved itself in the political conspiracies of the state and descended to the level of self-interest, their spiritual power was prostituted. And, said Paine, they lost all claim upon public respect. Paine saw the convincing plotting and counterplotting of religious leaders who had cast their lot with the aristocracy against long-suffering and exploited citizens. With a church such as this, he had no patience, and he had the eloquence and abundant courage to express his convictions regardless of the cost. He held the aristocracy in general in equal antipathy. Now listen, you see, he's going against the aristocracy. Who wanted to take down the aristocracy? Who wanted to take down the monarchs? The Jews and the Freemason Shabbos Goy, whom the Jews were controlling. So he was against the aristocracy as well. Privileged classes, to him, were a little better than parasites, living off the toil of honest men in total indifference to the public good. A government compounded from a dissolute nobility and fawning professional office holders, ever catering to the longer purse, brought Paine's righteous indignation to the boiling point, indignation which he could apply in words understandable to the masses. The masses. That's what Freemasonry calls us. That's what the Jews call us, the masses. It was his simple reasoning that such a church plus such a state equaled chaos. It was bad enough for government to burden the people with extravagances, but it was still worse for the church to preach that men should accept this load as coming from God. I understand what he's saying there. To see it designed to purify their souls by the practice of patience and humility. Yes, there were corrupt religions. Yes, there were corrupt religions. I'm sure there were corrupt monarchies. But you see, democracy did not solve the problem of the monarchies. See, there was a protection in the monarchies for us, believe it or not. In one way, we were wrong as Israel to want a king other than Yahweh just to be like the other nations of the world. However, it turned out later that these monarchies were a protection for us in many cases. Whereas democracy has laid you wide open to slavery and will end up in nothing else but slavery. This is why they are spreading democracy throughout the world. Democracy is a form of government that can be controlled very easily. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. Therefore, make sure we institute democracy in all nations and get our central bank in all nations, and therefore it really doesn't matter what government's there. Now, if you had a monarch who was the head of the whole thing, and he was a decent chap, he'd put an end to that immediately. So we can't have somebody like that. Now, if he could be corrupted and he could be coerced, which some were, by the Jews, then you might have a chance to get away with some things. But if you had a good fellow, a good man, a godly man sitting on that throne, you as a criminal, you as a Jew, were screwed, to put it lewdly. So, democracy is absolutely no protection for you and I. It is no good for you and I. Democracy has brought us the evil to the evil place we are at right now. Because give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. How do you think they got 96% of the media, ladies and gentlemen? If you can print up all the money, and I believe the Chicago Tribune was one of the last papers to go. If he wanted $2 billion for it back then, just print it up and give it to him. We want it. At your cost, the taxpayers' cost, because they made it so that the Federal Reserve would never show its books, never show where it spent the money, I'm telling you where they spent the money. They spent it on the Bolshevik Revolution. They spent it on buying up Hollywood. They spent it up on buying all the newspapers. They spent it up on radio, making sure that they had control. They spent it up on the medical system so they could get control of that. And every other functioning organ in our society today. It's not because they're so smart, ladies and gentlemen. It's because they cheated. There is no need for a central bank. Absolutely no need for a central bank. You want to end the debt today? Have the government print the money out with zero interest. There's no need for a central bank. But there is if you want to control a country and control people. So my point is that this Constitution, as wonderful as a document as you may believe it to be, we already had these rights from Yahweh and his laws. Every human being on this planet has the right to defend themselves and has the right to have weapons to defend themselves. Not only that, nobody's talking about the Dick Act of 1902. The Dick Act of 1902 should be being talked about nationwide all day long, all night long. The Dick Act of 1902 makes all gun laws that they have been putting in since 1902 null and void. You cannot modify any gun laws. It's illegal because of the Dick Act of 1902. It's irrevocable. It's a done deal. Why is nobody talking about the Dick Act of 1902? Because it sounds funny. The Dick Act. It sure will make sure that you won't forget the name of that, will you? The Dick Act of 1902. All these gun laws are illegal. Now, let me tell you something else about these gun laws. When you look up the definition of firearms, a pistol or a rifle is not in the definition of firearms. This is how they've tricked you, ladies and gentlemen. There's a court case in Washington. This is right on my channel. Go look up the Dick Act of 1902 on my channel. The man in that thing will explain it to you. That when they took him to court, they used Wikipedia's definition of firearms. That is not the definition of firearms, and that was not held up in court. A pistol and a rifle are not in the definition of firearms, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care who tells you have no right to have anything. You have a right to defend yourself. Even more today than any time else, probably in the history of this world right now, what's going on. Okay, so this is what I'm talking about with the Constitution. So rather than reinstituting the Constitution in America, because, you see, when the Constitution was instituted, the woman asked Benjamin Franklin, what kind of government did you give us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. This was an experiment, ladies and gentlemen, in democracy. I'll read you later on how the secret societies, right in this book here, how the secret societies have always worked for democracy. Plato talked about democracy. Remember, Madison said, democracy is the vilest form of government. So to put how did we get to the democracy? We got to it from being a republic. We got to it through the Constitution. So therefore, the Constitution is not superior to Yahweh's laws. Yahweh's laws are the superior law of all time, all space, everything. There is no more clear, concise law than Yahweh's. And it's a heck of a lot more simple than this foolish Jewish Talmudic law that they write, sit down. You see, when these fellows we're talking about here got together, they got together as every once a year or twice a year and addressed certain amount of laws or whatever they had to address. Today's government is doing this 24/7. Not 24/7, but every day. All day long. So that by the time you sit down on your couch, I've heard it said by Pastor Bob that you've already broken 38 laws by the time you sit down on your couch in the morning before you go to work. This is what the Jews do. They made the traditions of men try to supersede Yahweh's law and make Yahweh's law nothing, and their traditions of men superseded it. Yeshua did not like that at all. And Yahweh does not wish it to be this way. We don't need Talmudic law. We don't need the Noahide laws. I suppose I'll have to go over it here to prove to you that what these Jews do is they pass laws far before when they're going to enforce the laws. Daddy Bush, you know, the New World Order, it's a big idea, it's a big idea. I'm tired of hearing that. I'd like to shove a sock in his mouth. He's a Jew too. Well, he signed the Noahide laws with a bunch of rabbis around him. And if you think the Noahide laws have anything to do with Noah, you got another thing coming. So what the world needs to do is institute Yahweh's law as it was designed to be in the first place. We wouldn't be in the trouble we're in right now if that's the way it was. So let's move along here. It was not enough for Paine to believe that all men were created free and equal. These free men had the inalienable right of representative government. Oh, really? And the further right to improve themselves to the enjoyment of all natural good. He was more of a perfectionist than was a practical in his own day, or even in our time. Like most idealists, he failed to accept the weakness in that very human nature which he sought so desperately to champion. Only thousands of years of conditioning and the complete reorganization of government, religion. Now, see, these are things that God doesn't want. Government and religion. So only through, what's he saying here? Only thousands of years of conditioning and the complete reorganization of government, religion, and education could bring mankind to the estate which Paine envisioned. Well, this is the very thing that the Jew has done, as through hundreds of years of conditioning and reorganizing government, religion, and education to bring man to this point that we're at right now. That's how we got there, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, that's how we got there. He called men to a high destiny, and men understood in part and applied in part, but lacked the capacity for a full and understanding acceptance. This probably explains Paine's bitter attack on George Washington. Paine had been present when the American government was formed, and he must have been at least a witness to the bickerings which went on during those most critical years. As a president, Washington was not universally popular. It was only after considerable engineering that his election had been accomplished. Engineering, I wonder by whom? Almost immediately, the new government fell into political difficulty. See, Yahweh's law wouldn't fall into political difficulty. But immediately, with this thing, the government had fallen into political difficulty. That's a sign right there that we're heading in the wrong direction. Self-seeking politicians appeared on the scene at the very beginning. You see, if that's happening at the very beginning, what do you think the ending is going to be? Just as they have never since been absent from the picture. Paine, seeing some of the noblest ideas of the new state perverted and misrepresented, dared to speak when discretion held the tongues of other men. In Paine's own public career, made up of largely of reverses, he chose to accept all forms of personal humiliation rather than modify any of his attitudes. He never accepted that such a policy as he advocated would be impractical and in a permanent form of government. Political, you know, let me explain to you something right now. Is you have the Freemasons. I remember this on Bill Cooper's show. Perfect government is coming soon. Perfect government is coming soon. Bobo Greitz, remember? Perfect government. Now, he's a Mormon who does the first 3 degrees of Freemasonry in their religion. Religion. And perfect government is coming. Well, perfect government doesn't need to come, you understand, because we have Yahweh's law. That already is perfect. That is law perfected. We don't need Bobo Greitz's Jew perfected government. In Paine's own public career, made up largely of reverses, he chose to accept blah, 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 blah. Political experience leads the wisest of public men to the realization that the possibilities of public office are limited, and that good things must be brought out slowly and opportunely if they are to survive public inertia and opposition. But in principle, slowly. Now, didn't I tell you that gradualism is one of the key weapons of the devil? You see, if you brought everything out all at once, the public would see the change and immediately oppose it. But you see what he's saying here? He's agreeing with the devil. He's saying, political experience leads the wisest of public men to the realization that the possibilities of public office are limited, and that good things must be brought about slowly and opportunely if they are to survive public inertia and opposition. See, but that doesn't just mean good things would be brought about by politics. Now, we know how many good things they've brought about by politics in the past 10 years. It's been a lot of good things, haven't there? Yeah. Can you name one? I didn't think so. He was a utopian, a dreamer, with a mighty courage of conviction. And when the dream of world democracy is finally realized, we'll all be slaves. That's what I'm saying. That's not in the book. You see? And when the dream of world democracy is finally realized, we will all be slaves, and the Jews will be on the top of the rung, and the central bank will be the control mechanism, and the press, and Freemasonry. So, democracy is a dirty word. Paine's name and memory will be immortalized, for he was outstanding among the great pioneers of human progress. Human progress. Thomas Paine's crusading was part of that secret destiny which has ordained that all people shall be free and equal. You see what they're promising? This is the devil. This is always the devil. You're going to be a god. And if you just bring in my democracy, you're going to all be free and equal. But it's a lie. You're not going to become a god. I'm sorry to tell you that. And you will not be free or equal. Remember, the Jews, on one hand, say that we're all equal, and then they say, but they're the superior race, while they call the white people, the true Israel of the Bible, the true seed of Jacob, they call us white supremacists. Hello? Are you digging what I'm telling you? You don't believe me that the Jew says he's superior to all of us? Well, you go out and find out if I'm telling you the truth. You do believe me when the Jew says that they call us white supremacists, though. You do believe that. You have heard that, ladies and gentlemen, right? You have heard us called white supremacists, if we even care about our own race. But somehow you haven't heard about the Jew in many, many, many quotes stating that the Jew is the superior race. You haven't heard that, huh? Well, you must have selective hearing or selective vision. Many times his career appeared to have been ended by the accidents of ill fortune, but always he was preserved against his enemies and even against himself. He was one of the links in that golden chain that binds the earth to the pinnacle of High Olympus. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get to a great part of this. I know we're going to have part three on this, and I hope that you don't become disappointed when we have two or three parts in a series, because believe me, next week's will be good. This is, however, very interesting, and I'm going to tell you who I believe this man is. The unknown who swayed the signers of the Declaration of Independence, faced with the death penalty for high treason, courageous men debated long before they picked up the quill pen to sign the parchment that declared the independence of the colonies from the mother country. For many hours they had debated in the State House at Philadelphia, with the lower chamber doors locked and a guard posted, when suddenly a voice rang out from the balcony, a burst of eloquence to the keynote. God has given America to be free. Ended with the delegates rushing forward to sign. The American patriots then turned to express their gratitude to the unknown speaker. The speaker was not in the balcony. He was not to be found anywhere. How he entered and left the locked and guarded room is not known. No one knows to this day who he was. Well, I'm going to tell you who he was. Can you guess? No, it wasn't Eli James. Bad guess. Bad. I'm only kidding. Some years ago, while visiting the Theosophical Colony at Ojai, California, A.P. Warrington, esoteric secretary of the society, discussed with me a number of historical curiosities, which led to the examination of his old rare volume of early American political speeches of a date earlier than those preserved in the volumes of the Congressional Record. he made particular mention of a speech by an unknown man at a time of signing of the Declaration of Independence. The particular book was not available at the moment, but Mr. Warrington offered to send me a copy of the speech, and he did, but unfortunately neglected to append the title or the date of the book. He went to India subsequently and died at the Theosophical headquarters at Ajah in Madras. Then in May 1938, the speech appeared in The Theosophist, official organ of the society published by Ajah. In all probability, the original book is now in the library of the Theosophical Society. There is no reason to doubt the accuracy and authenticity of Mr. Warrington's copy, but I am undertaking such investigation as is possible to discover the source of the speech. You know, one thing I want to bring out right before we go on here is, do you remember World War II? May Day? May Day? What do you think that's about? It's about communism. It's about many different things. These people would say Mayday, Mayday, always, right? The pilots, etc. When they were destroying people. Did you ever think about that? Anyway, I'll explain that more in the future. On July 4th, 1776, in the old State House in Philadelphia, a group of patriotic men were gathered for the solemn purpose of proclaiming the liberty of the American colonies. From the letters of Thomas Jefferson, which are preserved in the Library of Congress, I have been able to gather considerable data concerning this portentous session. In reconstructing the scene, it is well to remember that if the Revolutionary War failed, every man who had signed the parchment then lying on the table would be subject to the penalty of death for high treason. It should also be remembered that the delegates representing the various colonies were not entirely of one mind as to the policies which should dominate the new nation. Remember, this was an experiment. Francis Bacon and the secret societies. America is the new Atlantis. There were several speeches. In the balcony, patriotic citizens crowded all available space and listened attentively to the proceedings. Jefferson expressed himself with great vigor, and John Adams of Boston spoke with great strength. The Philadelphia printer, Dr. Benjamin Franklin, quiet and calm as usual, spoke his mind with well-chosen words. The delegates hovered between sympathy and uncertainty as the long hours of the summer day crept by. For life is sweet when there is danger of losing it. The lower doors were locked, and a guard was posted to prevent interruption. Keep a note of that, ladies and gentlemen. According to Jefferson, it was late in the afternoon before the delegates gathered their courage to the sticking point. The talk was about axes, scaffolds, and the gibbet, when suddenly a strong, bold voice sounded, "Gibbet! They may stretch our necks on all the gibbets in the land. They may turn every rock into a scaffold, every tree into a gallows, every home into a grave, and yet the words of that parchment can never die. They may pour our blood on 1,000 scaffolds, and yet from every drop that dies the axe, a new champion of freedom will spring into birth. The British king may blot out the stars of God from the sky, but he cannot blot out his words written on that parchment there. The works of God may perish, his words never. The words of this declaration will live in the world long after our bones are dust. To the mechanic in his workshop they will speak hope. To the slave in the mines, freedom. But to the coward kings, These words will speak in tones of warning they cannot choose but hear. Sign that parchment. Sign. If the next moment the gibbet's rope is about your neck, sign. If the next minute this hall rings with the clash of falling axes, sign. By all your hopes in life or death, as men, as husbands, as fathers, brothers, sign your names to the parchment, or be accursed forever. Sign, and not only for yourselves, but for all ages. For the parchment will be the textbook of freedom, the Bible of the rights of man forever. Nay, do not start and whisper with surprise. It is truth. Your own hearts witness it. God proclaims it. Look at this strange band of exiles and outcasts. Suddenly transform into a people, a handful of men, weak in arms, but mighty in godlike faith. Nay, look at your recent achievements, your Bunker Hill, your Lexington, and then tell me, if you can, that God has not given America to be free. It is not given to our poor human intellect to climb to the skies and to pierce the counsel of the Almighty One, but methinks I stand among the awful clouds which veil the brightness of Jehovah's throne. Pay attention to that sentence. But methinks I stand among the awful clouds which veil the brightness. That's a key to who this is. You see, he's trying to force them. He's encouraging them, but he's also trying to force them to sign this. For some reason, it's very important for them to sign this document to this being. And not only is it important, but you see, he was doing this against the monarchy again, correct? And who wants the monarchy to be put away? Now, the word freedom, if I had the time, I would show you that in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, freedom is a word that the Jew says that all men will fight for. And they use that word freedom as a tool, according to the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. When I come across that again as I scan through that document, I will save it for you and read it for you so you'll understand what I'm trying to tell you. This being came from nowhere. There were locked doors, and there were guards posted. This being came out and spoke these words, and I'm going to continue. He's still speaking. But remember, he thinks, methinks I stand among the awful clouds which veil the brightness of Jehovah's throne. Now we know that Jehovah is not Yahweh's name. Methinks I see the recording angel come trembling up to that throne and speak his dread message. Father, the old world is baptized in blood. Father, look with one glance of thine eternal eye. Which father is that? Thine eternal eye? And behold evermore that terrible sight, man trodden beneath the oppressor's feet, nations lost in blood, murder, and superstition, walking hand in hand over the graves of victims, and not a single voice of hope to man. He stands there, the angel, trembling with the record of human guilt, but hark, the voice of God speaks out from the awful cloud. Let there be light again. Tell my people, the poor and oppressed, to go out from the old world, from the oppression in blood, and build my altar in the new. This is not Yahweh. This is not Yahweh. He didn't want to destroy the old world and bring in the new. Who did? It's stated on the dollar bill. To begin to destroy a new world order. To begin to destroy what? The vestiges of the old world. What are the vestiges of the old world? the family, the monarchies, the paternal God, meaning the father, you know what I mean? Now the gods are goddesses these days in the new world, correct? So to begin to destroy all the vestiges of the old world and bring in a new world order. You see, the old world order was when all the time from, you know, there up until, say, about maybe like this point here. Because this is the new Atlantis. It's not the old Atlantis. This is going to be the new world. And we're going to say bye-bye to the old world. So now we can, instead of having family and healthy families and farms and freedom, real freedom, not this garbage that they're portraying here, and all kinds of other things, we're going to have homosexuals, and we're going to have transgenders, and we're going to have hybrid presidents and hybrid political parties and corrupt governments and filthy, rotten money systems that are actually from the old world but are now in the new world. This is a Babylonian money system we're involved in. However, the Jew and the protocols of the learned elders of Zion slash the Illuminati, which is the same, are the same people anyway. You can go find out what the 21 goals of the Illuminati are, of the Illuminati. And when you see that, you'll read it and you'll say, oh, so they want to destroy all of this and bring in a new world order. That's what this is all about. Tell my people, the poor and oppressed, to go out from the old world, from oppression and blood, and build my altar in the new. As I live, my friends, I believe that to be his voice. Yes, were my soul trembling on the verge of eternity, were this hand freezing in death, were this voice choking in the last struggle, I would still, with the last impulse of that soul, with the last wave of that hand, with the last gasp of that voice, implore you to remember this truth. God has given America to be free. Is America free right now? No, it's not. Has America even been free for half of its life? Barely. If at all. Yes, I sank into the gloomy shadows of the grave with my last faint whisper. I would beg you to sign that parchment for the sake of those millions whose very breath is now hushed in intense expectation as they look up to you for the awful words, "You are free." The unknown speaker fell exhausted into his seat. The delegates, carried away by his enthusiasm, rushed forward. John Hancock scarcely had time to pen his bold signature before the quill was grasped by another. It was done. The delegates turned to express their gratitude to the unknown speaker for his eloquent words. He was not there. Who was this strange man? Well, it was Lucifer. That's who it was. It was Halel. That's who it was. Because, why do I say that? You say, oh, that's terrible. Well, did you know that this is called the land, America is called the land of the plumed serpent? Did you know that? Did you know that the Pentagon, when you extend the stars, the arms of the stars down, when you see the Pentagon, it becomes an upside-down star. Did you know that? Well, that is the truth. And there's one in the center of it as well, so it's a double star. It's a double Lucifer star. You know, Baphomet or the Goat of Mendes. I guarantee this is Halel that pressured these men to do this rather than institute Yahweh's laws. You wouldn't see any devil get up and speak and say, oh, yes, institute Yahweh's laws. Do it now. You can be assured of that. Who was this strange man who seemed to speak with a divine authority? Whose solemn words gave courage to the doubters and sealed the destiny of the new nation? Unfortunately, no one knows. His name is not recorded. How convenient. None of those present knew him, or if they did, not one acknowledged the acquaintance. How he had entered into the locked and guarded room is not told, nor is there any record of the manner of his departure. Who else could it be? No one claimed to have seen him before, and there is no mention of him after this single episode. Remember what America has done, ladies and gentlemen. Has it made the world free? No, it has enslaved the world. I'm sorry to say that because I love America, but yet I have to see things the way they are. America is responsible for spreading democracy, which means they're responsible for spreading slavery throughout the world. They've also spread all kinds of death throughout the world. This is the meeting place for the tribes in the end days. There is no doubt about that. However, the devil's handprint, as you can see right here, is all over the thing. It's over the thing in more ways than one. When you see the Pentagon and you see that upside down star with the goat face in it, the goat of Mendes, you'll begin to understand why they call it the land of the plumed serpent. Which has to do with Quetzalcoatl, the god Quetzalcoatl. There are many interesting implications in his words. Oh, yes, there is. Yes, there are many interesting implications. He speaks of the rights of man, although Thomas Paine's book by that name was not published until 13 years later. He mentions the all-seeing eye of God, which afterwards was to appear on the reverse of the great seal of the new nation. In all, there is much to indicate that the unknown speaker was one of the agents of the secret order, guarding and directing the destiny of America. More example of demonic activity in these orders. This man appeared, and he disappeared. Some time ago, an Eastern publisher suggested to me that an interesting and important title for a book would be The History of Unknown Men. This publisher was a great reader in history, and it was his observation that nearly all great causes are furthered by mysterious and obscure persons who receive little or no credit for the part which they have played. To write the history of these men would be to write the history of the Order of the Quest. The story of the unknown philosophers, some like Francis Bacon, come to high estate, but most of the unknown work obscurely through other men who gain credit with the fame. In an old book of rules used by the brothers of the secret orders is the following. Our brothers shall wear the dress and practice the customs of those nations which they traveled, so that they shall not be conspicuous to convey any appearance that is different or unusual. Under no condition shall they reveal their true identity or the work which they have come to accomplish, but shall accomplish all things secretly and without violating the laws or statutes of the countries in which they work. One of those who did not reveal their true identity of the work which they had done, which they had come to accomplish, one is the mysterious professor who inspired the design of our flag and remains unknown and unnamed. And similarly, another is the unknown speaker whose words removed indecision about signing the Declaration of Independence. It is not known who he was, and the incident is preserved only in a rare old book, the very existence of which is difficult to prove. It is reasonably conceivable that in secrecy and anonymity, well-ordered aid has been given to the struggle for human equity and justice that has been America's destiny through the past and in our present time. It is our duty and our privilege to contribute what we can to this universal plan. It will go on, served by the unknowns, until the Platonic Empire, Plato, the Platonic Empire, democracy, the Platonic Empire, the vilest form of government, is established on the earth, and the towers of the New Atlantis rise from the ruins of the materialistic and selfish world. Ladies and gentlemen, did you just hear what I just told you? Now, we'll read a little more from this book next week. We'll have part three on this. What do you think about that? I think it's very interesting. The secret destiny of America. Democracy. The plan for the New World Order. The New Atlantis. You see, Manly P. Hall, in that same book, will talk about the seal, the Great Seal. And on the dollar bill, we do have the all-seeing eye on one side. And the reverse side of the seal, there's an eagle. And above it, there's stars that make up the Star of David, the Jew that's on the Jewish flag. Also, it's got laurel leaves and arrows in its talons. However, though people think it is an eagle, it is not an eagle at all. What it truly is it's the phoenix. It's the New Atlantis. Arising from the old Atlantis. It's the new world rising from the ashes of the old. How did we get the ashes of the old? We burned it down to begin to destroy Anuit Coeptus. It does not mean he favored our undertakings. It means to begin to destroy. A new world order. So what they wanted to do, as I have told you, is destroy all the vestiges of the old world, all the things that kept the old world together. Yahweh kept the old world together. The family kept the old world together. The farms kept the old world together. The races being separated kept the old world together. And by burning it down, as these people have done, these Freemasons, these Shabbos Goy, these Jews, the devil himself giving speeches, their father, they have burned down the old world. And from the ashes of the old world comes the new world. However, it is a big idea, but not all ideas will come into fruition. The new world order, it is a big idea. It is a big idea. It's more than this and more than that. Yeah. And you thought you were going to cap the pyramid in 2000, the first day of 2000. But you didn't cap the pyramid there, Mr. Bush, Mr. Jew. So your big idea did not come into fruition, and your big idea, a new world order, is a failure. Just like Nimrod's world order was a failure. So I don't care if it's, you know, we all know that everything that was older was better anyway. So I would say that the old world order would far exceed this new world order. Because this new world order is nothing but garbage. Just like the Jew. Just like you, Mr. Shabazz Goy. You who have ruined people's lives and killed your own race and gone against your own race and enabled the devil and his children to get this far even. Without you, it could not have been done. How do you feel? Do you feel like a god now? What does it feel like to be a god, Mr. Shabazz Goy? Does it feel good? I know you have no conscience because I saw that at Bohemian Grove. I saw that they do the cremation of care. I remember hearing a Zeppelin song where he says, talking about the conscience, he says, knock it back with pills. Are you knocking back your conscience and searing your conscience with alcohol and pills? How do you sleep at night? We know the Jew has zero conscience. They don't even need to cremate their conscience. They just don't have one. They are living dead things. But how about you? Does your conscience ever come back to bite you? Or do you knock it back with pills? You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. My name is David James. And until next time, study to show thyself approved.